Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
Paul Tarasharish, the WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32. Now, popular for her no-nonsense, plain speaking style, whether it was revealing that she was in the bath when she heard some news or some memorable appearances on chat shows, Mary O'Rourke was never lost for words. She was a trailblazer in politics, serving in cabinet from the late 80s in a very male-dominated world, and she lasted a long time. She died only last year. And over Christmas in RTÉ, there's going to be a new documentary examining her legacy. And her son, Angus O'Rourke, joins us now. Good morning, Angus.
Good morning, Oliver. And thank you for having me.
Our condolences, by the way. It was October 2024, wasn't it, of last year that your mother died?
That's right.
How are you coping?
Oh, look, pretty good. Obviously, we've no regrets. Mum lived a very full and thankfully a long life. She passed away at 87 years. And she certainly had no regrets, and neither did we. She fulfilled a lot in her life. Things she wanted to do, she got done. And in her latter days, she just cherished her 6 grandkids, and they really gave her a new lease of life.
And she was very active, wasn't she? She kept in touch with all the politics and read the papers every day. She was sharp to the end.
She just had an insatiable appetite for politics, wherever it was in the world, Oliver. I mean, you know, if there was an election in Sri Lanka, Mum had all the detail on
really?
It, and she made sure that she was well briefed. She had the daily newspapers cover to cover read every single day by midday. So, yeah, she just loved politics.
She was 87, and it was a very full life.
Absolutely. You know, and it's not until, I guess, we've seen some of the archive footage and you forget some of it. Of course you do. Mm. But the people that she met, the decisions she was involved in, the policies that she brought through. But then again, I guess, her life in Athlone as a public representative, our house was very much an open clinic.
Yeah.
Not like today where TDs and public representatives have kind of an office in the village or in the town.
They've separated for security, I would imagine, more so nowadays. But it was all encompassing for the family, wasn't it, in your day?
Yeah, but I guess the convenience to that separation too for the family. But definitely our house was very much a key in the door. In fact, the door was ajar every Saturday from 9 a.m. until 10 p.m. Literally a couple of hundred people could come through that door and Mum would have heard them for whatever issue they'd have come to her for.
Where in the house would she have met the constituents coming in?
Well, we had 2 front rooms. One was the waiting room and one was the office. Myself and my dad and Fargal in the earlier days managed the front door. So we took the coats, made the tea, took the notes, handed out the forms, kept order to the queue, as it were.
Yeah. What age were you, do you remember, from the start of that job?
I was a young teenager. Mum joined the council in 1974. She was the first woman to be elected to Athlone Urban District Council at the time.
Yeah.
So I was only 6 at the time. I don't remember that. But then, obviously, 1982, she was elected to the Dáil. And things then, it was, well, senior hurling at that stage,
yes.
Oliver.
Very busy.
Yeah.
So you're up and running. Now this is what's going on in the house.
Yeah, look, it was a really busy house. There's no doubt about it.
The rest of the time, the rest of the week, did you feel you were sharing your mum with the party, Fianna Fáil, with the constituents, with the country?
Well, because I guess it happened incrementally that she went from town council to county council to being a senator, to being a TD, to being a government minister. It didn't happen overnight. Mm. And I have to say, my dad was really the rock. He was the support base, the foundation for everything. Dad was a wonderful sounding board for Mum. And we all knew our jobs effectively from early on. I remember Mum taking me through answering a phone call and making sure I got the name, the number, the address.
The training you got,
And to make sure that when she got the note from me, it was concise but to the point.
It's hard to believe she was only the 5th ever woman to serve in cabinet in 1987 when she was appointed, and she took no nonsense from Charlie Haughey. She was clear in what she wanted to do.
She was always very clear in what she wanted to do. And I remember, you know, even looking back on the photograph of the cabinet in 1987, Charlie as Taoiseach, she was the only woman in the room.
Yeah.
I think the only other woman that served as a junior minister at that time was Maura Geoghegan-Quinn, and she served as junior minister to the Department of the Taoiseach at the time. Yeah, but Mum, in a very masculine, you look at that photograph, Michael Woods and Ray Burke and Bertie Ahern and P. Flynn and all these guys.
They weren't just men, they were older men.
Absolutely.
Too.
message.
She's there and among them.
Yeah, and she wasn't fazed at all by that, you know. But it must have been daunting for her at the same time,
absolutely,
arriving up to Dublin.
Yeah, and the comments and mutterings she would have had to put up with must have been extraordinary. This meant, being a cabinet minister, obviously she's in Leinster House, she's around the place all the time. You must have been worried as a family with all the journeying she had to do and how much of her you'd see.
Yeah, I guess as her responsibilities grew and the roles that she took on, Oliver, it took her away a little bit more year on year. And I remember Dad sitting her down, because Mum was always adamant she wanted to get home. No matter where she was in the country, she wanted to be home. I guess home for us for the next morning for breakfast and making sure the uniforms are ready and all of that kind of stuff. She was very practical in that sense. But Dad had to sit her down eventually and say, look, you're going to have to stop all this driving. You need to be in Dublin from Monday to Thursday.
Yeah.
And do that. We'll take care of the house and Athlone and the kids.
And she described Enda, your dad, as a very modern man for taking that on.
Yeah, modern, I'm not sure about, but practical, definitely. Dad was
He wouldn't have seen it as house husband modernity here. It's just like, this is what the thing has to happen. He's not thinking about what anyone thinks of him.
No, absolutely not. And when you think about it, back in the late 80s, Dad was in his 40s, I suppose, and yet he was happy to support the woman who had maybe the higher profile role, and he was happy to take on some of the household chores, as we all were. So, in that context, I suppose you could call him modern. Yeah,
100%. But you'd never notice that as a tension or anything in the house. It was just, they were absolutely besotted with each other.
Absolutely. I mean, they were so, I never remember them having words, in fact, ever.
Really?
Dad and Mum were just always so close. And he was rock solid behind her in her career, political career. He wanted the best for Mum. He knew how much she wanted it, Oliver. So, you know.
They obviously didn't treat you as kind of, you know, kiddie children. They wanted you to have certain responsibilities, like you described, work in the constituency clinic in the house. But did you do the weekly shop as well at certain points
when you were
a kid?
I remember as a young teenager, Mum would make out the list in the morning on a Saturday, and Dad would drop me into the local Quinsworth that was then in Irish Town. And I'd push the trolley around and make sure I went by the list. And in those days, there was no mobile phones, but there was a customer telephone at the back wall of the shop, and I'd go down there and I'd phone Dad then when I had the shopping ready. And
Time to collect.
He'd come in, he'd pay, and we'd go, and we'd unpack and get things ready at home.
Did you enjoy the job?
Well, look, I really didn't think too much about it. As I said to the start, we all kind of knew what our jobs were and we got on with them. I suppose I can say I always loved it when the house was just, you know, totally overrun with people on a Saturday I knew my friends were probably out kicking ball or
and you're there as a teenager pushing a shopping trolley,
making tea and making that 100 cup of tea and so on. But I can't say I always loved it, but I grew to understand that this is what Mum really wanted, and she was good at it.
The candour that she displayed in her media interviews and in her public life, was she like that at home?
There was only one Mary O'Rourke. You know, she didn't perform for anybody. Mm. So definitely people often ask me that, what was your mum like at home? And she was exactly as you saw her on the TV, because she spoke very frankly. She used very simple English. She explained things very clearly. And I think people appreciated that. She was very open on the airwaves, as her adult son at times. I had my fingers in my ears, I have to say. And there are clips still out there of some of the, I saw some of the shows. Mum was on one occasion asked to, you know, be an agony aunt on a programme years ago, and people were writing in about the relationship problems. And here I was listening to my mother deal with people who had bedroom problems and in her 70s. And I'm her adult son thinking, oh my God, how did this happen?
She was brilliant at it.
Was she?
She was great fun.
She was good fun.
I think we should go in order here, because this is her as a minister, the infamous clip on Morning Ireland where I think the CIE chair has resigned, hadn't contacted the minister responsible. She's on Morning Ireland explaining the whole situation.
The Minister for Public Enterprise, Mary O'Rourke, and she's on the line. Mary O'Rourke, good morning.
Hello.
Are you disappointed?
I'm surprised. There I was on my bath this morning with the radio on when the 7 o'clock news came on, and that's the very first I heard of it, because I was coming in to meet Brian Joyce at 8 o'clock this morning.
There I was in the bath. She really regretted that, didn't she?
Well, yes, she did wash herself, Oliver. It was important too. But your mum wasn't a great fan of the shower, I have to say. She loved her early morning bath. And she never missed Morning Ireland or any topical radio programme, I can tell you. She went nowhere without the radio. But that was her. She was just frank and open. And there was no performance in her. That was just the way she was.
It was hard because Michael O'Leary famously had a cartoon drawn of her in the bath and put ads in all the papers. For both your parents, it was tough though, wasn't it?
I think it didn't really irritate Mam too much. Dad probably was somewhat annoyed by it, I'd say, and he would have got a bit of stick in the local pub, I'm sure, that kind of thing. But it was manna from heaven for Michael O'Leary and the likes of it, you know.
And the political correspondents who were sniggering away at the vision of it and being the rare female cabinet minister. What you referred to being the adult, the grown-up, this is when she became the agony aunt. The Saturday Night Show, Brendan O'Connor sent her off to review 50 Shades of Grey. I presume these are the things you were begging her not to do.
Well, Mum wouldn't tell me, you see, that she was about to do this. That was her strategy. All of a sudden, she'd ring me and say, listen, I'm on the Saturday Night Show tonight. And I'd say, great, we'll tune in. But didn't tell me.
But would you have told her not to do it?
Oh, I'd have said, Mum, really, do you need to do that at your age? She never turned down an offer to come on the airwaves and have her say.
But she was very entertaining. Let's have a listen. She was 78 at the time.
I thought at the end of it, well, if you were going to go in for all of that, you call it kinky stuff, it's very hard work. Very hard work. Really. And I thought to myself, give me romance any day. Romance, except that Dornan said on the film, I don't do romance, he said. But I thought it was awful hard work. By the time you got all those things assembled, and then by the time you took them down, and then by the time you used them, and then by the time you put them away.
It's good you're laughing at it now.
Oh yeah, it's funny. It is funny. I don't think I was laughing on the evening. I think I was behind the couch with my fingers in my ears, Oliver, to be honest with you.
Sure.
And my phone was popping with text messages from the lads from the football club, of course.
What were they saying to you?
Well, you can imagine.
You can imagine. Yeah. There are some lovely messages in for people. This is actually a really nice one. Mary O'Rourke was hugely encouraging to me at an early stage of my career in a commercial semi-state. And back in the late 90s, 2000s, she often pushed rows of senior men, and it was all men, pushed them aside to engage with a woman in the room and ask their opinion. I had the height of respect for her and I remember her very fondly. That's from Anna. That was something that people remember in a different way to you, that she spotted somebody with talent and she would wade through whoever was in the way to give them the bit of advice.
Absolutely, yeah. No, Mum, I think, you know, when people say to me about Mum's legacy, what is it? I don't think it's a policy particularly. And there were many. There was, you know, the Stay Safe programme, there's the Home Liaison programme. Certainly many things that we could point to. But Mum's real legacy, I think, is how she interacted with people. And I get at that every day still at home and at Lone. People reminding me of the things that Mum did or carried out for them and for their families over many years. So that really is her legacy, I think.
What also stands out is the fact that she makes her own reputation and her own brand, doesn't she? Having come from a dynasty, she's very apart from it. Obviously, she was a Lenehan. Her father was a TD, famously. Her brother, Brian Lenehan Sr., was actually in cabinet with her at one stage. But she forged her own path all the time.
She did, yeah, and was determined to do that. And now she was very, very close to Brian Sr., but she was particularly close, Oliver, to Brian Jr. They were very alike, you know, personality-wise. Yeah. They were driven to the same extent. They were very political, both of them. So Brian Jr.'s passing really was a huge blow to Mum. And as he became more unwell in the year leading up to his passing, that was very difficult for him. Of course, it was difficult for Patricia, his wife, and Tom McClare's son and daughter too. But on a extended family basis, Mum was very, very close to Brian Jr. So that was a big blow.
Would he have called her for advice? Because that was a period, probably the most tumultuous period in the history of the state since the Troubles, the crash and the bailout era, which the late Brian Lenehan was involved in.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a very, very difficult time. And of course, they would have leaned on each other for advice a lot during that time. But Brian, I have to say, we're so proud of Brian Jr. And the work that he carried out. He was determined to stay at work for as long as he possibly could at the time. It would have been easy for him to step away and to give someone else the problems of the day. But Brian was adamant, and I often think of that image of him as he went to Europe on that snowy day in the airport. And he thought to himself, how did we get here? How did we find ourselves here at all? So that was a very difficult time, of course.
I'd make those impossible decisions that were made. As Minister for Public Enterprise, she was there herself for storms, wasn't she? The Aircom privatisation and the fury that built up after that, because ordinary people encouraged to buy shares. The shares, of course, lose their value very quickly with decisions made by the new private company. That hit her hard.
It did, and it hit people hard. I think people who maybe invested and thought that it was going to make them a quick buck or whatever, it didn't transpire that way. Although I think that for up to 8 months after the flotation, you would have made money. But I think people got involved in the shares by way of
expected
savings
long-term.
And
yeah,
long-term
exactly.
pensions and so on. Yeah, so that was highly regrettable. My mum lost her seat soon after that. So
yeah.
I guess there is some kind of correlation between the two.
A 500,000 people. And this was the start of a very tough time in her period, in a period in her life, because your father, Enda, he dies in 2001, very suddenly.
Very suddenly, at 65 years of age, way too young, and out of the blue, as you say, Oliver. So, yeah, you know, you had that whole Aircom debacle. You had Dad's passing in 2001. You had Mum losing her seat in 2002. So it was a very, very difficult time. Obviously, we rallied around as a family, and the many supporters that Mum had, we all rallied around, of course. But I think something that helped her greatly at the time was the arrival of our kids, because 2002, Jennifer and Luke came along, and
very soon,
six
yeah.
grandkids in quick succession from 2002 to 2010. So they were very special to her. And look, she got back on the horse, and very soon again, she won her seat back.
I think one of the most famous things about her is how she spoke about becoming a widow and her love for her husband and how good looking he was, you know? I mean, it was kind of like something people didn't do. Here she is in 2019 talking about your dad, Enda, after his passing.
Enda died, God rest him, and I went back to Dublin that week, and I came home back to Athlone on a Thursday. So he would have been dead a week. And I walked into the house, and there was total silence. There always had been Enda there, or there'd be radio, or there'd be people, or there'd be... And I remember, you know, I remember putting down my bag and thinking, is this all there is to life? Is it all over? Am I finished? Is life forever over because Enda's gone? And you know what I did? I went down to the bedroom, turned on the radio, went into the little office, turned on the radio, went into the kitchen, turned on the radio. So there are voices. And when I go away, I leave the radios on so that when I come back, I hear the voices.
It was unusual, and it helped an awful lot of people, didn't it, to hear someone speaking like that?
Well, you see, it was very raw for Mum then. Dad had only passed a week earlier, of course. But Mum was, she needed company. She wanted to have conversations. She wanted to listen to people. And when she wasn't doing that, she was either writing or reading. The English language was her thing, and she had a great command of the English language, Oliver. But that's true that she turned on all those radios, and sometimes when Mum was away and I'd be maybe checking up on the house, for I'd open the front door and I'd hear all these bloody radios on, and of course I'd switch them all off. No need to have all the radios on in the house. But she also had a candle lit on her living room table, and that always too was just a reminder of Dad. But you know, one thing that would have horrified Dad was Mum spoke about Dad so much after his passing that Enda O'Rourke almost became a household name.
Yes, he did.
And Dad is a very modest man. Anybody who knew Dad, he'd have been horrified at the idea of so many people knowing who he was. Yeah,
but it was for a good purpose.
Absolutely.
Wasn't it, in fairness. Yeah. When she comes back then for one last term, 2007, was she delighted? Did she know this was kind of a cap at her career after everything she's just endured that you've spoken about?
Yeah, I think so. She was determined to come back and fought very hard to do so. She'd spent a term in the Senate, a successful term in the Senate, and was well regarded as leader of the Senate at the time, and forged many relationships, Shane Ross among others. And in fact, to mention Shane, he was very, very good to her. She was a regular visitor to Mum in the nursing home.
Oh, really?
in her latter years. But yeah, she came back, and she came back in flying colours in 2007. She got a ringing endorsement at the at the ballot box.
Yeah. 30 years after entering cabinet, a remarkable,
amazing career.
I presume the grandchildren didn't know much about her, but there's a lovely moment, isn't there, when you and your brother Fergal and the grandkids gather after your mum had passed away in October of last year. Tell us about watching the news.
Yeah, so I guess we're maybe a little bit guilty of this as well, that as time passes, you forget all of the maybe the events that mum was involved in, the people that she met, the policies that she'd have brought in. And there were lots of beautiful tributes all over at the time. We were back in Fargo's house and of course, RTÉ had it on the news, and they were playing back these reels of mum in the early days, and the kids were just literally standing there agog with, my God, Mary just was involved in so much and met so many people. And did you, was she involved in the Lewis? Is that her thing? And so many other things. So, yeah, we've had an opportunity since to remind them of some more things. And it's been great. And in fairness, the media have been wonderful in terms of how they've captured so much of mum and so much of her career.
For someone involved in so many, you know, controversial eras in Fianna Fáil, she's so affectionately remembered. And it's an amazing story. It truly is.
Well, thank you for saying that.
We can look forward to it then. Cluach le Carn is the documentary, Mary O'Rourke, The Mammy. It's going to air on the 28th of December at 7:30 in the evening. Aengus O'Rourke, thanks a million.
Real pleasure.